I'm calling this meeting to order. This is the Parks and Environmental Sustainability Committee of the Whole meeting held on Tuesday, October 28th, 2025. I'm sorry, October 28th, 2025, commencing at 4:32 p.m. Council members in attendance are Council President Kritzer, Council Vice President Forsyth, Council Member Salahuddin and Stewart, and online joining us is Council Member Fields. And myself, Councilmember Nueva Camina, as a presiding officer. Any late arrivals, I will let you know for the record when they arrive. We have two action items to discuss today, five informational items from this committee, and then we'll have one item from safety on the agenda today. The first item on the agenda today is the amendment to the operational services agreement between the City of Redmond and Wave Aquatics. Joining us this afternoon is Director Hamilton and Deputy Director Hoopner. Welcome.
Good afternoon, City Council. I'm Director Lorraine Hamilton. I'm joined today by my Deputy Director, Zach Hoopner. And the item we're bringing forward today is an amendment to our operational services agreement between the City and Wave Aquatics. Wave Aquatics has operated the City's pool, and we're looking to continue that with some updates and changes and improvements. So I'll hand it over to Zach to finish this item.
Good evening, Council. As Lorraine mentioned, we're looking to exercise the final renewal option from the 2020 Operational Services Agreement, extending Wave Aquatics management of the Redmond Pool for 5 years. This amendment strengthens our 15-year partnership by enhancing community access, updating operational standards, and modernizing compliance requirements to better serve our community. This has been a collaborative process. This amendment represents a collaborative effort between the City of Redmond staff, Wave Aquatics staff, the outgoing interim executive director from Wave, and the newly appointed executive director. His name is Dave Glenn. In addition to the Wave Aquatics board leadership through multiple meetings, communications, and check-ins, this agreement has been reviewed by our legal and risk teams. Both parties recognize that the original 2020 agreement lacks specificity, causing unintended operational challenges. Some of those high-level improvements that we address through this amendment include formalized resident priority and community access that was not explicitly detailed in the original 2020 operating agreement, establishing clear customer service standards aligned with city expectations, and created accountability through enhanced reporting requirements for data-informed decision-making. Some of the key negotiated terms include dedicated city programming. So we have put in 200 hours of guarded pool time annually for city programming, a 100% increase from the previous agreement. That includes an additional 3 hours weekly during the summer surge, June through August, for 6 hours total weekly during that time frame. We also address resident priority. So in all other registration windows for Redmond Recreation Programs, we offer Redmond residents that live in 98052 or work in 98052 early access. This agreement also requires Wave to hit that same mark for 98052 when signing up for programs. We also identified a peak hours definition, Monday through Friday, 8 to 11 a.m. and 3 to 8 p.m., Saturdays, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sundays, 9 a.m. to 3:30. We also have a peak hours protection for community-based programming, which would include a minimum of 55% of all operational hours reserved for programs such as water safety and drowning prevention, learn to swim, swim lessons, aquatic instruction, adult and senior aquatic fitness, therapy, masters, and recreational programs, lap swimming, family swim, as well as open and recreational swimming, and lastly, adaptive, inclusionary, or therapeutic programs. Community-based programming excludes facility rentals, competitive swim, dive, team practices and meets, school district use, as well as private lessons or programs restricted to specific organizations. Additional enhancements include fee assistance administration that will be aligned with city processes, improving highlighting operational and maintenance responsibilities. And in closing, staff recommends placing this amendment on the November 18th consent calendar for approval. At this time, we'd be happy to answer any questions. Yes, sorry, I missed customer service expectations. Throughout the years, we have had some concerns throughout the community on customer service standards. And so through this agreement, we've worked with Wave Aquatics leadership as well as our own city customer service standards. And we'll be offering twice annual customer service training for Wave Aquatics as well as providing them with our standardized policies and procedures regarding citywide customer service.
Wonderful. Sounds like a win for Redmond there. Council, do you have any questions? I'm sorry, before I do that, let the record show that Councilmember Anderson has joined us. And with that, do you have questions or concerns? Online, we've got Councilmember Fields and then Council President Gritzer.
Yes, I want to express my appreciation for the changes that you made. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago when I received a number of emails about the service and the availability to actually beat some of the wave, the teams and the wave aquatics that were sort of jumping ahead in line. And it sounds like you really dealt with that. And also at the time, I think I talked with Director Hamilton, I went over there personally a couple of times after getting those emails and felt like the service level was really not welcoming. And I felt actually left and decided not to go back to my own pool in my own neighborhood. I have not been back since, but I plan to go, and I appreciate the work that you've put into this, and I will be supporting it.
Wonderful. Thank you. Council President Kritzer.
Thank you. And thank you for the work on this. I also hear a lot from residents about the pool, especially since we invested so much in renovating it. But then since we aren't operating it, we get feedback, but oftentimes it's really two-wave aquatics. In particular, I think around swim lessons, I hear a lot about. I've actually never been able to get in on time to get a swim lesson for my kids. And I hear that from other parents a lot of frustrations. So I love the idea of being able, first of all, to be able to get the priority for the Redmond residents. Curious, do you think as part of this agreement, are we going to see an increase in the amount of swim lessons available, or is it more just giving some of that period for sign up for residents?
I don't necessarily think that there's going to be an increase in the availability of swim lessons. However, I think that the swim lessons will be prioritized to Redmond residents first, and then any additional times will open up to non-residents after that fact. I know that we have been working hand-in-hand with Wave Aquatics staff and leadership over the years to understand some of their pain points with offering swim lessons, and I know that they've done some operational things over the past several months that hopefully has made it easier. One of the things that we all have, I think everyone acknowledges, is the lack of pools on the east side. And so trying to fit in all sorts of different programming, I think it's a balancing act.
Yeah, and if I may, that's kind of what I was going to say to Deputy Director, is that just for the size of community that we have, frankly, the pool is just not going to be able to meet every person's need. And that's going to be a continued challenge that we hear from our community about. And so we're hopeful that these improvements will help prioritize for our residents. And, you know, the swim teams that Wave Aquatics operates, a lot of those are our local kids who are swimming on their teams and participating in their diving programs. And so we are really excited that they get to, you know, call our pool their home. And we're excited to see that expanded access. We're excited to see the prioritization, the fee assistance, and all of those things expand, but I don't anticipate this fixing all of these tension points that we have, simply because the size of pool for the size of community that we've become, only half of that pool can really be used for lessons, particularly those learn to swim lessons because of the depth. So I think we're just going to continue to find some of those tension points until we, as a greater east side, greater region, figure out some solutions to long-term pool infrastructure.
Thank you so much, I'll just note my appreciation for the work to figure out how can we work best with the situation that we have, and as you noted, that we'll be getting more kind of frequent reporting, and I saw some of the additional reporting requirements there, especially around like usage of the pool. Would love to be able to see that come back to council on a periodic basis, or be able to get an update on kind of how the changes have actually made any difference in terms of what we're seeing in usage. Yeah.
We can include that in our recreational program updates that we bring forward as part of that piece.
One additional thing just to mention is that Wave recently went through a software transition that has allowed us to get that additional clarity for those operating and reporting metrics. So like Director said, we'll bring it back in the recreation updates.
Any other questions or comments from council? Well, I'm very happy to see the Redmond residents being prioritized with this. especially since we have access to waterways and making sure that we've got access to swim lessons. It's heard that, you know, it's going to perhaps mitigate any increased number of issues for customer service, but that we'll still feel that tension because, well, our community is going to be growing. It's already a smaller resource for what we have. And while our community is going to grow, that pool is not. So with that in mind, thank you for bringing this item forward. Looking forward to seeing it go on consent. Council, is there any concern about this going on consent for, when was this coming back?
November
18th. Well, seeing none, we'll see you then. The second item on our agenda is the Award Parks Impact Fee Study Contract to the FCS, a Bowman company, in the amount of $79,890. Director Hamilton is remaining with us, and joining us is Lindsay Falkenberg. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you. Good afternoon. This is our next parks item, and this is to award a contract for a parks impact fee update, and so I will hand this off to my parks planning manager, Lindsay Falkenberg.
Hello, City Council and Council President Kritzer. My name is Lindsay Falkenberg. I'm the Parks Planning Manager for the City of Redmond. And Parks is seeking to undertake an impact fee study in order to update our park impact fees. The last update to our park impact fees took place in 2017, so it's been a minute. And the existing methodology needs to be reevaluated to ensure that it remains consistent with best practices, anticipated growth patterns, and park system usage. We're looking to contract with the FCS Bowman Company on this project, and we're seeking your approval on a contract in the amount of $79,890. Under this contract, the FCS will provide professional services. They will conduct a comprehensive review and update of our current park impact fee schedule. They will also assess our current approach, identify and evaluate alternative methodologies, and recommend updates to the fee schedule that reflect changes in our community's demographics, land use, and recreational demands. The FCS will also seek to incorporate recent legislative changes. This includes middle housing, RCW, and the House Bill 452, and includes developing a fee structure for middle housing types. Once we have completed this study, we will be able to update our impact fees in 2026. As soon as this contract is approved, we are prepared to begin working with the FCS, and this study should be complete in about 9 months. FCS is highly qualified to support us in this process, having carried out similar studies and updates with many neighboring cities, including Kirkland, Fife, Issaquah, Kent, and more. And our desired next step is for this item to return to City Council on November 3rd during the consent agenda for approval. Are there any questions?
Council? Council Vice President Forsyth.
Thank you. So you stated that this will come back November 3rd for council approval or council
consent.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to have enough numbers to feed into our budget process at that point, since next year is a budget?
So no. So I was actually just going to add that. So the goal actually is to adopt this park impact fee into the budget next year. And so we won't have those, you know, new and improved numbers for Director Cochran to include in her calculations, but the finance will be involved throughout. And so they should be able to also make some estimates. The other thing to note that I wanted to note that might get to part of your question is we haven't updated our methodology in 8 years, but we update it per the COLA or the cost of living every year. So it's not drastically probably going to change too significantly, but we will see some shifts. And I know that Director Cochran and her team will be ready to incorporate that after it's adopted.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Want to make sure that budget process and this align so that we're all on the same page. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Council President Kritzer.
Thank you. This looks like a good proposal. One question on the stakeholder engagement. Can you clarify a little bit of the stakeholders that they would be engaging, since it seems like a lot of this project is calculating the fees? Is it those who would be paying the fees, or is it more about is it part of understanding kind of the demand that feeds into the fee?
Yeah, we asked that during our interviewing process. I'm trying to remember what they said. But if I remember correctly, it's more, you know, like internally trying to understand stakeholders that are maybe working on updating fees within the city and methodology. So, you know, internally having folks give feedback on that process, but then also making sure that we are including people who might be paying fees, so developers, and understanding how that process goes for them and making sure that the methodology works well. So I'm remembering that correctly, but I'm also happy to go back and look at my notes and then come back to you all with some more information we can follow up.
We can follow up in an email.
Council Member Stewart, and then Council Member Fields online.
Sure, thanks. Just quickly to add to the conversation so we can all feel that the fees, impact fees, are being considered holistically. I just wanted to give a preview that next week in my committee, exclusive of Parks and Fire, we'll be reviewing the contract for the annual impact fee indexing. So stay tuned for more next week. Thanks.
Thank you. And Council Member Fields.
Yeah, so when the work is done by the vendor and you get a set of recommendations, what is the process after that, to determine or verify that we did in fact get the equity that we were looking for and how those fees would be applied? You mentioned middle income housing. So does it go to you and then you work with them to fine tune it from a city perspective, or does it come straight to council? What is the process that you anticipate after the work is done by the vendor?
Yeah, I think there's some internal process first. So, we'll work back and forth with them, and we have people from planning involved in this as well. And so in finance. So there'll be some internal process to make sure that the study, it's a study, and they help us understand how to implement it as well. And so we'll have some of that back and forth with them before we come back to you all with any sort of an update or recommendation.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions or comments to be added at this time, and my questions were already asked. So, Council, is there any concern for this going to consent for November 3rd? Well, seeing none, we will have it on consent and see you then.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Our next item on the agenda is not for action, but now switching over into one of five of our informational items. First up is the Environmental Sustainability Action Plan Implementation Update for October 2025, known around here as our ESAP update. And joining us, staying with us, is... Okay, well, Director Hamilton is just hanging out. And welcome, Jenny Liebeck.
Yeah, good evening, Council. So I'm Jenny Liebeck, Sustainability Manager, and with me this evening is Valeria Cosgrove. She's our Sustainability Coordinator in the Executive Department. And this is just our quarterly implementation update of the 2020 Environmental Sustainability Action Plan. So Attachment A, our usual spiel, Attachment A includes a lot of the details. Tonight we did just want to highlight two specific updates that were included within Attachment A. So the first is, I just want to call to your attention that we're really excited. We're nearing the home stretch for the 2025 ESAP refresh, right? So the next chapter of our climate work. And so we will be coming before Council for a third study session on November 12th. And the intent of that study session will be us reviewing the full draft plan. And so draft materials will be coming to you on Friday. I did just want to flag one piece is that we will be delivering a Word document version of the plan, but know that then the following week we will be emailing you and publishing for the community a design version as well. So content is still the same, just looks prettier. We just needed a couple more days to get that all wrapped up. So again, we're really looking forward to seeing you on November 12th to dig into that plan. And then the next highlight that we wanted to touch on today, this past summer we conducted an air purifier distribution event, and this was in response to wildfire smoke and to help our communities become more resilient. And so Valeria led the development, research, and implementation of that pilot project. So we just wanted to highlight some of the lessons learned and outcomes of that work.
Perfect. So yes, as Jenny mentioned, we distributed 104 air purifiers at zero cost to income-qualified residents to build community resilience against wildfire smoke It was a pilot program, so there were limited purifiers, but we did really targeted outreach to ensure that people who received these air purifiers would not otherwise be able to afford a purifier or get to a shelter easily in the case of a bad smoke event. So we did outreach through Avon Villa, Friendly Village, and Martin's Mobile Villa. And it was kind of a way to see if there was a need. The answer to that is yes. We had over 100 applications, gave away all of our purifiers, 70 of them through distribution days that we did at Avon Villa and at City Hall, and then 30 of those were given out through our community partners that we've been working with throughout the entire ESAP development process. And I just want to highlight some like lessons learned from this experience, one being translations. So we translated the applications. We had translated legal disclaimers for people that received the air purifiers and translated educational materials about smoke safety for the recipients. Made a world of a difference. At Avon Villa, we had me, a Spanish speaker, there to be able to help people work through the applications. And then we also used the new translation tablets when we hosted the distribution days here at City Hall. And with that as well, location and outreach approaches in this pilot program were very informative. I think it was interesting. We learned that mailers kind of were the most effective way to let people know about the program on their doors or in their mailboxes. But we also worked with property managers who used their mailing lists to digitally contact their tenants as well. And also location. So when we did our distribution at Avon Villa, where people were already living in their neighborhoods, we had a lot more people come and sign up on the spot and were interested and more open to receiving an air purifier versus doing it at more centrally. It was more just the people that had already applied and were notified. So, and also another interesting lesson learned was the type of fan. So we offered Winix purifiers, which is a smaller, kind of nicer air purifier. Then we also offered the option for a box fan and filter that supplied cooling and filtration to kind of see if there was any sort of preference within the community. And pretty much everyone wanted the Winix purifiers, even those who had originally signed up for the box fan and filter. So I think it just speaks to providing something that it's nice to people that they want to keep and take care of. And we're excited for next year. We're hoping to scale up the program. We have everyone's information who had applied this year to remind them in the early summer to replace their filters. And we're hoping to acquire some filters to be able to provide those replacements for free and upkeep maintenance for them. And we will be doing that partnering with the fire department for future distributions as we expand the program. So.
Thanks so much, Valeria. Yeah, so that is all we had for our informational update today, but happy to answer any questions.
Council? Council Member Stewart.
Thank you so much, team. I really appreciate the work on this. I think that the grid capacity study that is mentioned in your report is also really important. Wanted to just give you an opportunity to share a couple of sentences about what is the question that we're trying to answer with this, and it looks like we'll be back in a couple of quarters with the results.
Yeah, so this is a project we are doing in partnership with the City of Bellevue. Really just to have a first step in understanding what we as cities can do to help address the challenges we have with grid capacity, especially as we grow, as we decarbonize our buildings, right, and put more demand on the grid and as we electrify our transportation system. So we understand that these pieces are in tension, and we just want to be sure that we're being as proactive and good partners to the utility and also having the utility understand what some of our challenges and needs are as well. So we're really looking forward to that. And again, we will be back before council with that in probably Q2, I think around there is when we should be back.
Council President Kritzer.
Just a quick note. First of all, thanks for the great work that you're doing. I think this year in particular, we've seen it through the work that you're doing, a lot of interesting innovations and pilots. And I think in one of our last items, we were talking about thinking ahead to budget. But I just wanted to put on the record, you know, with pilots like this air purifier distribution or even the solarized campaign or, you know, the tree giveaway, which it seems like there was more than enough demand. It's just that I hope we'll see when we come to budget next year, taking some of these pilots and some proposals to scale up. If we see there's demand from residents and that's helping our community be more sustainable and achieve our community-wide targets, let's scale those up. So.
Absolutely. And just a quick note with that is that that's also why we are updating our sustainability plan at this point, right, is that we understand what our priorities are now. Then we start into the budgeting process next year with a really clear vision of what the needs are and what the opportunities are. So then we can work with finance to align as much as possible those opportunities with the budget. So we feel really well positioned moving into the next budget cycle. Thanks.
Wonderful. Any other questions or comments for Jenny today? Well, Jenny, there were plenty of things inside of here that was really great work. One of the through lines that I saw was actively going out into the community and meeting the community where they are and not pulling them to City Hall, but rather going to there. So I thought that was incredible, whether that was, you know, having partners to help plant for the plant, the tree giveaway with this particular program with the air purifiers. On the topic of the air purifiers, do we have anything scheduled for any type of feedback after the purifiers have been in use or getting any follow-up after that?
That's a great question. We had not planned on that, but we absolutely can. So wonderful. That's a great idea. Thank you.
And thanks for the update. Moving on to our second informational item on the agenda is Old Firehouse Facility Recommendation Process Update. Joining us, welcoming back Lindsay Faulkner to the table. Welcome.
Good evening, Council. Director Hamilton from the Parks and Recreation Department, joined by Lindsay Falkenberger, Parks Planning Manager, here to just give an update as to our process with our recommendation for the Old Firehouse Teen Center. We've been hard at work with our stakeholder group and our consultants, and so Lindsay's here to give an update. As a reminder, we are planning to come back to City Council on November 12th with a full study session. And so if there's questions that you're hoping that we hit in that time, it would be helpful to know those today as well, because we may not be able to answer everything today, just from both we may not have the answer and time.
Hello, City Council. Again, Lindsay Falkenberg, Parks Planning Manager, and excited to give you guys an update on the Old Firehouse Facility Recommendation Process and where we're at. Since I was here last on September 23rd, we've taken the following steps. Immediately after coming to City Council on the 23rd, we held our second focus group meeting on September 24th. We held that at the Redmond Community Center at Marymore Village, and that one included an online focus group for folks who weren't able to attend in person. We use the same format at that focus group session as we did on September 22nd, and ultimately, over the course of the two focus groups, we had 57 unique attendees that included teens, service providers, community members, alumni, parents and caregivers, and OFH alum. I might have just said alumni twice. We also held our third stakeholder group meeting on October 1st. At that meeting, we checked in on group reflections since meeting two. We discussed stakeholder group recommendation factor scores. We presented key themes we'd heard during the focus group meetings. We shared additional information about the options and known factor data, specifically comparing advantages and considerations for a renovation versus a rebuild. And we scored the options for each factor. Then at our fourth stakeholder group meeting on October 8th, we checked in again on group reflections since meeting three. We shared requested information around timeline to open for each option. We presented the stakeholder group's recent scoring results and calculated weighted scores for each option and discussed the scores and learnings from the overall MOTA process. And we had multiple small group discussions and share outs in order to start building towards our final recommendation. At our fifth stakeholder group meeting on October 22nd, we checked in on group reflections since meeting four. We shared updated mentee poll results of the group recommendation leaning since we'd added a third option for them to score, which was rebuilding on the current location, and that was based off of their feedback and feedback that we'd received from the Teen Center subcommittee. And then we also had breakout group discussions on visioning for the future of the Teen Center and presented a draft recommendation based off what we had previously heard and gave them an opportunity in breakout groups to revise the recommendation based off of their own input. And throughout all of this, we've continued to update the redmond.gov/OFH website. We are almost caught up on posting meeting minutes for the public to view. And those meeting minutes are reviewed by our consultants, by city staff, and by the stakeholder group for accuracy. We are also continuing to reflect frequently asked questions on that website as well as the process.
And then additionally, last time we were here, you requested that we rework the graphic that we provided to better demonstrate the Teen Center subcommittee's involvement and to kind of show those touch points better. So we did do that. It was included in your council packet and has also been posted online. And our upcoming steps, tomorrow we're holding our sixth and final stakeholder group meeting. At this meeting, we will finalize the recommendation and reflect on and receive feedback on how the process has gone. And then by the end of this week, you will have the recommendation in hand as part of your council packet to prepare for the November 12th study session. And just as a reminder of what will be in that recommendation or report, we'll send you the slides for the November 12th study session, but we will also send you the final report, which will include the recommendation, but it will also include context around the project. It will provide a description of the process in detail. It will provide an overview of key themes and topics discussed, so we'll expand a little bit on the recommendation to give more nuance to what the conversations within the stakeholder group have looked like. And it will include some visioning that the group has done, as well as a report back from the focus group sessions so that you have more context around what we heard during those. And all of the meeting notes and other materials that we've used during the process will be included as appendices. We will then return on November 18th in hopes of hearing a decision on whether to renovate or rebuild the facility. And beyond that, we anticipate more engagement will be necessary in order to guide the next steps of this process and continue to ensure that we are centering community needs and voice. And with that, are there any questions or, as Laureen mentioned, anything specific that we can do to prepare for our upcoming study session?
Council? Questions, concerns, comments? President Kritzer, please.
Thank you so much. And thank you to you and the staff for your hard work on this, to the facilitators and to the stakeholders and everyone who attended the focus groups. There's been a ton of really great input and conversation. It's been a real privilege to get to observe those meetings. And I did want to let the council know that the subcommittee has been meeting, even though we have been in that observational role during the stakeholder group, we've met then with Director Hamilton in between those groups to share feedback that can be sent to the facilitator and to help to guide to make sure that we'll hopefully get a recommendation from the stakeholder group that will help the council to make the ultimate decision. So just wanted to kind of to share that and hopefully to also share what we're hearing as reflections as we're talking to members of the stakeholder group, residents, and to kind of feed that into the process. So I just wanted to note that. And also just in terms of process, we will have this study session coming up in November, and I don't want everyone to feel that we have to rush to a decision. I think the goal is that we make a decision this year so that way the staff can move forward with knowing specifically on renovate versus rebuild, specifically to know what to do with the building in the wintertime. But as council leadership, we have made sure that we have time into December if we need to add additional discussion time or decision time on this. Although hopefully, we'll see a great recommendation and be able to come to some conclusion in short order. So thanks.
Council Vice President Forsyth.
Thank you. So I started listening to a really interesting podcast that I think Councilmember Nueva Camino let me know about, which is called Let the Kids Dance. And it goes into the history of Seattle and banning kids from going to ages venues. And I believe that's part of where this venue came from. I'm not yet to the Redmond episode, but it got me thinking that it would be really interesting to see over the years what our attendance rates have looked like from, say, our inception, if we have that data, just to help us also inform the conversation that we're about to have in the coming months. And I encourage everyone to check out the podcast because it's absolutely fascinating.
Thank you. And yeah, we're happy to come back with some more information during the study session, see what we can do.
And next question, we'll go to Councilmember Fields online.
Thank you. So when we had the subcommittee meeting last week, there was a couple of things talked about. One, Council President referred to that we may need more than one study session to go through all this information. The other was the value or the potential value of a minority report coming out of the sub, or not the subcommittee, but from the stakeholder group. You sort of hinted in your presentation that there would be a full set of information, but you didn't quite address that issue. Have we moved one way or another on whether we, if the stakeholder group is split to some level of significance on the recommendation, will there be a minority report coming out of the stakeholder group?
There won't be a minority report, but there will be a minority recommendation, yes. Because the recommendation, whether it's a majority or a minority, is couched in the data that we're bringing forward from the process. And so the short answer is yes, there will be a minority recommendation included.
And as we go into the meeting tomorrow, you will be clear that if in fact that's necessary, or some level of group thinks that's important for council to know about, that in fact will be built during tomorrow's meeting, correct?
What do you want to give? Go ahead.
It's already built into the draft recommendation that we're bringing into the stakeholder group tomorrow, because last week's meeting made it clear that there was a small contingent that felt that that was really important, and overarchingly, the entirety of the stakeholder group was supportive of that. So it's currently already built into the process.
Got it. Thank you. And then Councilmember Forsyth brought up the issue of attendance, and I just wanted to make note. I don't know if there's any information available, but what I've heard from former employees that they didn't, and I think we heard this once during public testimony as well, that there's not really reliable numbers on people who attended either concerts or came to the teen center during events, because they weren't always able to log in, or we weren't always able to capture that. So I think that to the extent that we can provide council information on either the lack of attendance or the full attendance will be helpful in our discussions ahead.
Thank you.
Councilmember Stewart.
Thanks so much. Appreciate the chance for the update and to understand what's coming next. Just two clarifying questions. The first is for staff. Given the kind of cadence of when these meetings are, am I correct that this Friday, when the council materials are posted, we will have this report in hand?
Yes.
Okay. And will it be cross-posted to the OFH website? Redmond.gov, the project site where folks have been finding information?
Yeah, I can make sure our staff do that.
It's easier for the public to.
Absolutely, yes. If it doesn't, depending on when everything gets posted and done on Friday, it may be Friday, it may be Monday, but yes, we'll make sure that it gets up.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the council? I'm looking forward to seeing the numbers of users throughout, you know, throughout the history, as well as what we've seen. I know pandemic has definitely impacted those numbers, and you know, on afterwards, post what that looked like. So I'm very interested in that. And just reminding of just how much outreach has been done on this inside of our packet, goes over the engagement timeline and the diverse places and groups of teens that we've been chatting with, as well as additional stakeholders going back all the way to March and continuing on. So thank you for that. We will be looking forward to the recommendation on Friday. Thank you.
Thank you all.
One more quick question, if I may. Oh,
so sorry, before we move on, Vice President Forsyth.
Just sitting here thinking about the conversation and about attendance, if there's any moments that we either expanded hours or reduced hours, that would be interesting to know as well.
Can do.
Great. Thank you so much. Moving on to our next item, informational item number 3, volunteer program update. Don't go away too soon. Staying with us is Director Hamilton and Lindsay Falkenberg. And joining us is Maya Clem.
Hello, City Council. My Again, my name is Lindsay Falkenberg, Parks Planning Manager, and in 2025, the city hired a volunteer coordinator in order to streamline volunteer opportunities, improve reporting, increase visibility of volunteer opportunities, and tell the story of volunteers in Redmond. Tonight is my pleasure to introduce Maya Clem, whose full title is Green Redmond and Volunteer Coordinator, but is here tonight wearing her volunteer coordinator hat, and who will debrief City Council on the current state of volunteerism at the city and share goals for increasing engagement, improving reporting, and streamlining our systems.
Thank you, Lindsay. Hi, Council. So as Lindsay mentioned, my role was brought on earlier this year in March to centralize and streamline volunteer management at the city. Half of my full-time position is to coordinate volunteerism as a whole at the city. I started this by convening a volunteer working group to work collaboratively across the department and the city to understand the needs from all the various different volunteer groups at the city. As I'm sure many of you are aware, there are a lot of different volunteer opportunities that the city currently offers, and they all have their own unique ways of registering for those programs, sharing information about those programs, tracking the metrics of those programs, and then reporting that out. So I first wanted to learn from all of those programs before I started making any recommendations, to hear from staff what is working, what isn't working, from all of those various different programs. So over the last 6 or so months, I met with all of those groups and then convened a quarterly working group to hear from all of them and continue working on streamlining that. I then started to research and develop volunteer management softwares with the goal of launching a software after doing all of that research next year. We currently have a couple of different softwares that we're using at the city. And again, we have many different programs that are doing all sorts of different methodologies across how they're recruiting and tracking those programs. So we want to centralize that so that it's a lot more clear for all the volunteers how they can get involved in all of these various programs. So we researched, I heard from that working group and then did a bunch of research to understand what program will be best for our needs at the city. And I believe that we have found one. It's going through the approval process right now. That program is called Volunteer Matters, and it will meet a bunch of the different needs that I heard from the folks in that working group. The goal is to launch it internally in quarter one next year to be able to train staff and get all of our programs posted on that platform before we launch it to the public in quarter two of 2026. As you all know, there's a really big appetite for volunteer work here in the city. We have seen that pretty much all of our events fill up, our programs fill up, we have wait lists for programs. I get emails all the time from folks who are upset that events are full and they wanna know how they can join. And so I think to meet these needs, we first need to make it clear for folks how they're able to join these different programs. I get a lot of emails and calls from folks who are unclear on how they can join these programs. So I think one step is having a staff member who can help answer those questions. You know, my contact information is listed on the website. When someone Googles volunteer in Redmond, I believe I'm the first one that comes up. So I think it can be helpful just to have that contact information to be able to streamline that work. And then beyond just making it clear for community members how they can volunteer at the city, also making it really clear for staff what support exists to be able to develop new programs to be able to support volunteerism across the city. Because as I mentioned, our current programs, even if they're sort of unorganized in how they're recruiting and tracking all of that, they are full. And so understanding with staff what the support that myself and others at the city can provide to be able to support development of those new programs, I think will also be really easy with this new volunteer management platform that we'll be launching. In addition to making it clear, it will make it really easy for us to centralize that tracking so that we can tell that story of volunteerism. I think that has been also lacking. We have these incredible programs, and stories are not necessarily told about the impact that they have for the city and all of the amazing work that they're able to do in their different programmatic areas. So I am hopeful that we'll be able to launch this next year and it will do all of these great things that we've been thinking about. Thank you. I will take any questions.
Council, what questions or comments do we have? Council Vice President Forsyth.
Thank you. Welcome. We are all very excited to have you in this role. This was a really big initiative of Council to make sure that our volunteer energy that we have in our community was being harnessed. So we're very excited to have you here.
And I would just say when that platform gets up and running and any opportunities that we can share out with our networks and our communities, please, please, please let us know.
Definitely.
Councilmember Stewart.
Thank you so much, Maya. As my colleague just said, this is a long, like having this report at this stage of progress that you've made is just like incredibly exciting. So it sounds like, especially in the few short months that you've been here, like you're right on track. Congratulations. Just a couple of things. I wanted to verify. I know that with the city over in the fire department, we recently hired a new emergency manager and preparedness coordinator. They're going to be spinning back up the community emergency response teams. Are they at the table, at your round table? Awesome, I'm seeing a head nod, that's great. I guess the one thing I would just add is I am really eager to, I've seen the first kind of iteration of redmond.gov/volunteer, but I'm just really excited to see that space when you are more ready going into next year, being a place that not only internally do our city staff know what to do and who to turn to when they wanna spin up new volunteer roles, but our community knows where to go. It's like a one-stop shop for getting more involved in that way. So just really looking forward to that. And thank you so much for everything you're doing.
Yeah, and I can speak to the emergency management piece as well. I just met with the new coordinator a couple of weeks ago as he's starting to get into his role. And it sounds like there's not any volunteer work that has currently been happening as they bring the staffing capacity up in those roles with the new manager coming on, I believe, in the next couple of weeks. And so he will be joining those volunteer working group meetings, and we'll discuss if it makes sense for that work to be on a similar platform. Or one really great thing about this platform is it has the ability to link to external events, but it all shows everything in the same place. So even if the actual event registration or program registration doesn't happen in that same site, it can all be in one place of truth on that redmond.gov/volunteer.
If I may add in really quickly as well to that, just to kind of ground us all in the same place, police and fire do still manage their volunteer programs separately. So Maya is making sure that they're looped in and there's a lot of great conversation. But just for any of the listening public, and also just a reminder to those of us here in the room, that police and fire do still coordinate a lot of their volunteerism separately from many of the other departments. But Maya's doing a great job of making sure that everyone who wants to be in the room to have those conversations is there.
Council President Kritzer.
Thanks so much for this work. Really excited about the new software and platform. One thing on that I wanted to know, we get a lot of emails from especially young people in our community, teens that want to, you know, volunteer to be able to get engaged and kind of have that experience. Also hear a lot from Girl Scout troops, Boy Scout troops, Cub Scout troops that want to do different projects with the city. And so I hope that platform kind of gives the opportunity not only for specific events, but also like if people have a general interest in being able to get plugged in and involved or do some sort of project, that they have that ability to do so.
Agreed. And I also get a lot of those requests from kind of young people and then also the corporate group side of things. And so the intention with this platform is to have essentially an application for those different groups so they'd be able to say exactly what they're looking for, what the timeline is, and then I'd be able to plug them into those various programs, hopefully, that exist.
Council Vice President Forsyth.
Thank you. The last comment just made me think that it would be interesting if there was a filter for like all ages, 15 under, 15 and up, just so that when our community goes and searches, they're not let down by the, I'm not old enough to volunteer at this event.
That's a great idea.
And on that, even for families, I was able to join the Green Redmond Partnership this past weekend on planting trees in Idlewood. And I got there just in time to be hauling mulch and planting. I think I got in probably 7 trees in the ground. It was great. But what was remarkable was the number of families that were there, and families of all ages. And there was something that everybody could do and be a part of. I saw folks that my son played lacrosse with. I saw his mom. I saw another family that I've known, and our kids have grown alongside of each other for some time. I think that this is remarkable for Redmond, because I'm often pointing out we are a community of over 50% renters, and we've got community involvement from our renters that are saying, hey, I'm a stakeholder. I want to be involved. I want to participate. and I want to make this a family thing. So having that family checkbox would be really great as well. Any other questions or comments on this item before we move to our next? Well, Maya, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm glad that you're here. Moving on to our next agenda item is, okay, the next two are going to be the same staff. So this is going to be number four is the events recap for 2025. We're going to welcome up. I see Deputy Director Hoovner is staying seated, so he's not going to join us. Brittany Pratt is going to be joining us, and she's got friends coming along as well. Welcome, Brittany.
Yeah.
And Director Hamilton is staying with us.
Good afternoon, City Council. We're going to switch gears and start talking about our events update from 2025, as well as dive into the program plan for Redmond Lights 2025, because it is right around the corner. Joining me today is my Recreation Business Manager, Brittany Pratt, our Marketing and Events Supervisor, Lindsay Tusing, our Events Coordinator, Laura Williams, and our Events and Marketing Coordinator, Mac Douglas. Sorry, I was so close. There was a lot of them, but Mac is new to our team as well, so they're going to be joining me tonight to give updates on all of our upcoming events and an update from last year's events as well.
Thank you. I'm Laurel, Program Event Coordinator with the City of Redmond, and I'm going to start off with a preview of Redmond Lights 2025. So this year's month-long celebration will start on December 6th and go until January 5th. As usual, we will have light installations and temporary public art at Downtown Park, and we're excited to share that this year we're going to be activating Astaire Park as well, which is really cool. I did some research on like the history behind Astaire Park, and it seems that this is a great time to activate it with Redmond Lights. So on the first day, we'll kick things off with an event from 4 to 8 at Downtown Park. We're going to bring back a lot of the annual favorite activities, such as the Kids Light Fashion Show, the Family Light Promenade, and the live performances, as well as the activity booths hosted by local businesses and community organizations. As usual, we, with our signature events, we really want to make sure that whenever or whoever comes to our event, they see themselves represented and the event is accessible to them. So all elements of Redmond Lights are going to be 100% free, including giveaway items this year. And we've also made sure that our performances and the community booths that will be there are culturally diverse, and also that all ages are going to be represented. So, and of course, the event will be accessible to people of different mobility needs. We will be partnering with Microsoft again this year to make sure that people have transportation to accessible parking. And yeah, so far in terms of outreach, back in August, September, we started reaching out to different businesses and organizations on how that they can get involved. And then this month is when we are going to start doing outreach to local residents and attendees. We have some plans to raise awareness via banners and posters, postcards, and of course, digital communications such as social media and newsletters, videos, a website, and more. We really want to make sure that everybody is aware of this event, because one of the goals is to build community, and not only that, but to keep those connections going long past the event, not only with residents, but residents, local businesses, community orgs, tourists, really bringing everybody together. So far, the estimated cost is $135,000. Budget-wise, we are looking pretty good, even with the activation at Astaire Park, because we had a pretty successful Derby Days this year, and we were able to use some of that rollover budget and put it back into Redmond Lights. And we're also very grateful for the LTAC grant. Sponsorships continue to come in, and so far we're around at around $68,000 in sponsorships. So with that being said, I would love to talk about a few changes that you might be able to anticipate at Redmond Lights this year. One, we're working with purchasing to update a contract with Redmond Town Center to make sure that we can continue partnering with them while also meeting our insurance requirements and making sure that both us and RTC are properly covered. And then we're also looking at ways to make Cleveland remain accessible to residents and business owners and how to do that safely. So I've been working really closely with the Public Works Department and seeing how we can get creative with our new Meridian barriers to say, hey, how can we make this event safe for pedestrians while also not blocking off parking access to the residents and business owners that live there? Because that's one of the largest pieces of feedback that we get every year, and we understand. So we're going to see what if we can do what we can. And we will also be doing the pre-event workshops again this year in partnership with the Redmond Library. So at the Redmond Senior Community Center, there's going to be two free pre-event workshops where kids and then one for adults can come and dress up their outfits in LED accessories and flair completely free. And we will be co-promoting our kids' zone. So if adults want to come but they don't have childcare, we're going to let them know that we have childcare available. So we're very excited for those updates. Any questions about Redmond Lights?
Councilmember Stewart.
Thanks so much, Laurel. Appreciate the update. I have a couple of questions about the Estera Park activations. I'm very excited. My first question is, like, how will people know? It sounds like I didn't hear that there'll be some event to also open up that space. So if there is, I'd love to hear about it. And also, how many installations are we going to have up in Estera Park? We're kind of all familiar with the dozen or so that end up in Downtown Park. How many are we expecting up there?
Yes, so in all of our outreach communications, we are going to be including something along the lines of, and new this year, Estera Park, not only in print ads, but also social media and on our website as well. And so the reason why we don't have event elements this year is just because we want to make sure that budget-wise, it's hard to predict how much it's going to cost, and we want to make sure that we are using those funds responsibly. So this year, we know for sure we'll be able to do the light and the art within budget with the staff that we have. And then based off the numbers we get back, we'll see if maybe in the future we can grow to having event elements there as well. And then, sorry, what was your second question? Did you have a second one?
How many installations will be in Estera Park versus the larger Downtown Park?
Yeah, so there will be holiday lighting bordering Estera Park and the trees and the shrubbage. And then in the art, there will be three temporary public art installations, but they're not like single units. Like they have, two of them have multiple pieces to them. And they're two of my personal, I'm very excited to see them come to life. So even though it sounds small with three, it's just not one installation. It has multiple pieces to two of the pieces.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. And I very much understand the scaling up of additional spaces. Maybe we can make a social media moment of plugging in the new installation and lighting up the neighborhood for the first time with a city signature event. It's kind of a big deal. So I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Wonderful. Any other questions or comments from council at this time? Seeing none, quick question on my part is if we are going to be doing any partnerships with hotels around Redmond Lights.
Yes, so we will be promoting local hotels and encouraging people to make a weekend of it by staying. And then I know that the planning team is going to have an event on Friday, a World Cup activation event on Friday, and they will be promoting Redmond Lights then. And in addition to that, I have been working with I've reached out to Experience Redmond to see what it would look like if we were to do a block of rooms or other new ways we might be able to partner this year.
Wonderful. Great. Moving on to our next item is the events, permits, and Derby Days recap 2025. and everybody staying here at the table.
Awesome, thank you. So I'm going to cover our Derby Days recap. So Derby Days is our annual summer festival here at Redmond. It's also our largest city signature event. This year's event had a lot of the annual favorite event elements, such as the carnival, food vendors, a craft fair, live performances. And we also had the drone show as well as the parades. And we did add in a few new elements this year. We had two cooling centers and then a bubble or foam party. And those weren't random. We wanted to add in some elements this year that would offer a cooling feature to the event. And those successfully met that goal for us. This year, going into Derby Days, we relooked at our event goals to make sure that they were in alignment with the park plan, as well as to optimize the safety and experience of all event attendees and our partnering organizations. The event goals this year, one, to build strong event communities by bringing people together and also promoting ways for them to stay connected beyond the event. Expanding access for all by removing potential barriers, and that included increasing the amount of free activities that we provided to people, and also improving the accessibility of the event layout. And then lastly, protecting the natural environment by creating a parade that there was no fossil fuels allowed. I don't know if I'm using that terminology right, but basically everyone that was in there had to be human or EV or RNG powered vehicles, and then also diverting event waste from landfills. I would say that we successfully met some of these event goals. One thing that I would continue to love to do is focus on how we can make the event more accessible for people using different mobility aids. And with our other goals, big success meeting them. We estimate that over 35,000 people were in attendance. Over 500 people participated in the kids' bike parade. And 88.8% of attendees stated that they're likely or very likely to attend again, which was a slight increase from last year. 88% of the vendors reported having a positive ROI, and over $109,000 was raised in sponsorship dollars. The parade was 100% human, EV, or RNG powered, and we were able to divert over 3,800 items from landfills, which equated to 185 pounds of waste diverted. So overall, I felt like Derby Days was a huge success this year, and we're excited to see what's to come for next year.
Questions or comments from council? Council Member Stewart.
Thanks so much. Love Derby Days as always. It's always a huge hit. We saw already in the LTAC recommendations that there is a partner who's going to help us bring a bike race back to town. We're very excited about that. I will actually just use my time to talk about the parade. I think several of us have had the conversation after this last experience. Maybe there's a optimistic metric on here, but I think that we could double the size of the crowd in the parade, at least in terms of curb space we have available for people to come to a parade they really want to come to. I love the way that our parade is so community focused, and it is so people powered. That is something unique about our parade. A few ideas that I've been kicking around include better promotion of our Grand Marshal. I think there's an opportunity to make that more known. Then it tends to come out like a day or two before, it really feels like. And so maybe there's more opportunity to make that a bigger deal, and maybe add some star power through the getting ready to meet the world next year in the World Cup. We have crafted some amazing relationships and are on our way to building great relationships with Sounders legends, the Mariners, many of whom live here on the east side, recently just went to the playoffs. I think there's some room for some star power, and we can find an EV or a scooter for a great partner like that that could also help us fill that curb space. So that's something that I'd like to see us work on, and I think several of us have kind of had that conversation in the days since Derby Days. Thanks.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Any other questions or comments? Well, that looks to be it. I'm sure that you are going to be getting more recommendations or ideas coming to you in email in the near future, and of course, as we get closer to there.
Thank you.
Okay, that brings us
to events.
To events.
Events and permitting. We wrapped up our busiest season in recent memory in 2025 for the number of events permitted. And our highlights are, of course, making a city council debut tonight, Mac Leonard. Happy to have him. He's excellent. He hit the ground running at the peak of event season this August and really can be credited for keeping it on the rails and making it really successful. And also, you might remember earlier this year, we rolled out a new process for receiving and processing special event permit applications. And I think our numbers and the feedback we've received so far from event producers is that it was really successful in being much more accessible. And when we receive the application, it's already much more complete because of those mandated fields that you can't submit the application without. So when we receive the application, we're already halfway there in gathering the information we need to vet it and move forward with the application. Those are our highlights for the year for event permitting.
Any questions or comments from council? Well, seeing none, that brings us to the end of our agenda. Thank you for hanging in there with us this afternoon. Is there anything else for the good of the order? I'm so sorry. There is one more on here, and that is the mobile command post tour for council. And coming over and joining us this evening is our police department, Redmond Police Chief Lowe. Welcome, Chief.
Thank you. So it is actually a tour. So the new mobile command post was delivered yesterday. So we've set up out in the parking lot for council to have a tour and walkthrough of the new asset.
Wonderful. Well, let us gather our things and go. And then from Council President Kritzer, did you have a comment? Okay. Well, then after concluding that tour, then we will...